Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to the Pinckney Show. I am the Reverend Edward Pinckney. I tell you, we had another great week. Who would believe that a person who has been elected to office, has been in office for over 12 years, that have done exactly nothing? Not a thing. Nothing to help the community, nothing to help the people, nothing to do anything. In other words, they have done exactly nothing. Wow. And most likely will get elected another 4 years here in the city of Benton Harbor. Nobody will believe what is happening here. All you have to do is go to school with someone, be their friend, know them, and you could steal the future of their children from them, and they'll pat you on the back like you're doing something sensational. Wow. Martin Luther King made your assumption was that if you are nonviolent, if you suffer, you're suffering and to move to change his heart. This is very good. He only made one assumption. In order for nonviolence to work, your opponent must have a conscience. And this is what they don't have here in the city of Benton Harbor, a community that is controlled by Whirlpool Corporation. They even control the courthouse. Corruption like never before. When I was in prison, this white lady wrote me a letter. She said, 67% of all the white people that live in Barron County, Michigan was racist. She said the courthouse criteria was, in order to get a job there, you must be racist. They don't outright say that, but that's what they did. Most people, I would say maybe 97% of the people that work at the courthouse is a racist. Judges, you got Judge Wiley, you got Judge Lasada, you got Judge Carter, Judge Sterling Sharrock, all. And they're not afraid to say it. Average Buzzball, who is dead now, along with his buddy John Hammond, two of the most racist individuals in the nation. But here's the good news about that. They're both dead. They're both dead. Average Buzzball and Judge Hammond, two of the worst people that have ever been on the face of the earth. What they did to the black community, wow, was amazing. But yet the people accept it. Most of the time when it does not affect them, they normally don't care. If their child get killed, people don't care. They don't care as long as it don't happen to them. That's why people are able to get away with stuff. This guy, John Hammond, was ridiculous. He was a known racist. They even said that he led the KKK chapter here in this area. I don't know whether it was true or false, but we know that the Klans came here 2 years in a row. And nobody showed up. But this is the work of they do over there. They do things to intimidate people, make people afraid to move forward. We're living in a time where we are going to have to do something. And here's the key thing. There's never, ever change without a conflict. You can't negotiate with the devil. And why would you try? If you're not willing to take a bullet to make things right in the community, then you're not doing anything but spinning your wheels.
That's right.
You're not doing nothing but spinning your wheels. And that's just the way it is. This is the time that we're living in right now, where people only care about themselves, and this is what this system is counting on. It's counting on people to not care enough to stand up for his neighbor, the person down the street, across the street. This is what they're hoping. And they like to put you in a position where you have to need them in order to survive. That's what it's all about. That's where this fight is today. And we can sit back here and march. We can sit back here and fight. We can do all these things, and it means nothing. The only thing that this country understands is violence. This is one of the most violent countries there is in the world, but yet they're good at shipping the blame. How they called the Indians savages, and they're the one who was killing the Indians, stealing their land. They love to use their media and everything else to prove their point. All the history, American history, most of it is nothing but a lie. They've been lying to people. They've been lying because people have not questioned it. They sit around here, they slaughter maybe 100 million Indians, and then the Indian is the bad people. Wow. Where in history do that show up? Where in history? They put black people in slavery, and now they're trying to make it like the black people are the bad people. Bad black people are the violent people. Now, here's what's going on. This system has instituted mercenaries, contractors, and hired killers in these cities. And they have infiltrated the gangs. They're going around killing people with no remorse. Little kids, 6 years old, 7 years old, don't care, because that's the job they've been hired to do. And we have allowed them to get away with it. Think about all these killings in all these cities. And nobody ever get arrested. Well, let me say this. 95% of the people that commit these crimes get away. And if you're not watching, they'll get you. And don't think for one moment that these people like you. It's all about the 1%. And if you can't take it, you're not going to get it. That's why we should be out here training right now. We should be buying firearms right now. We should even be buying tanks or whatever we need. Because I see it coming. And the only way to win this battle is to make sure that you're prepared. Preparation is the biggest thing that we can do. And, you know, you really don't count on your cousin and all those other people. You know, you can only count on yourself, what you would do. Because for money, they might shoot you. For a few dollars, they might shoot you. We're living in that time. And think about this. Our T.I. family. The government is so set on destroying people. They have over a million people I call TIs. A lot of people may not like that term, but I like that term. They call them TIs, target individual, people who are targeted by the government. Mind control. And that's what they do. They control your mind. They'll make you go out here and rob a bank, knowing that you have no intention of robbing a bank, but they'll make you go out and rob a bank. They'll go out here and make you kill your neighbor. They want to see how far that they can take you. And most of the time, they attack. They go to your neighbor. Make sure your neighbor don't believe nothing. Go to your family. Make sure your family don't believe nothing. Make sure they institute in their mind that you are crazy. You're nuts. This is what they do. This is not something that, you know, that is not happening. This is how they deal with us. No love, no respect, no nothing. And they always use it for the good of the country. For the good of what country? You tell me. For the good of the country. I don't know what that means. I have no idea what that means for the good of the country. Especially this country. One of the most bloodiest countries there is in the whole wide world. On the blood of others. Murder. Like it ain't nothing. How they used to lynch black folks. This is what they mean. These southern folks used to go to church at 11 o'clock. Every Sunday, they wouldn't miss a Sunday. Then at 3 o'clock, they bring their families, their children, and lunch, and lynch a black man. Burn him, lynch him, cut off his penis, all this. And not one of these individuals went to jail. Not one. None violent. If we continue at the pace we are now, we're going to be extinct. They're using all kind of, even this covert is designed against black people. But before I go any further, Jeff Murray, press one. Press one for me, big fella. If you're available, press one. Now we talking. I got to bring in my guy, Jeff Murray. He's definitely well-read. I would consider him probably a scholar at this stuff because he know. He's been tracking it for years. And I believe in him. I believe what he's saying is actually happening today. But let's talk. Let's just hear from Jeff and see what Jeff got to say and take it from there. Jeff, are you there? Talk to me.
Yes, I'm here. How you doing today?
How you doing today? I'm doing great, Jeff. You hanging in there?
Yeah. I've been on this targeting program for about 20 years.
Yes.
It's a government program, like you said. The government, it's not criminal related. I wore a path out walking in and out of the police station when they first started this on me in New Hampshire, and I said, hey, what's going on? How come you guys are cutting me off at every corner in the traffic and trying to create an accident with a cruiser? And like you said, exactly what you said, they said, well, nothing's happening. You're just crazy. And I said, well, I've been taking cell phone photos of you folks, and you're cutting me off. You're trying to provoke an incident here. What have I done? You know, if you got something against me. And so then even in the station, they started poking my coat and grabbing my coat to try to provoke a fight. And I said, I know what you're doing. You want to search me? I take off my coat. Here it is. So this went on day in and day out, and I'm getting vandalism to my home, inside and outside of my home. Since I got down here to South Carolina about 10 years ago from New Hampshire, same thing went on here. When I was out in California and San Diego, same thing went out there. It's nationwide, follows you. When I was here, I locked the door of the house and I went out for about an hour and a half walking to walk for exercise. And when I got back, there's water spilling all over the floor of the kitchen. And there's a big dent in a new faucet tap in the kitchen that I just installed myself. It was the first one I ever did, upside down, laying on my back. And the water's pouring all over the place. And I go, what the heck? The door was locked. So I reported to the police. They didn't even come down. And It was a $1,000 bill to replace it because it took out the garbage disposal. That also was damaged. And, you know, they do home entries is what I'm trying to say. You know, my mother died, and I had a $12,000 check that I put in the night bureau next to my bed the night before at 10 p.m. on a Sunday night to deposit into the bank at 9 a.m. the next day. When I woke up in the morning, it was gone. And that's when I put on all mechanical locks inside my home. Because when you're targeted by the government, and it's the FBI that kicks it off, it's non-criminal related. It's actually in Wikipedia. It's called Special Access Program Unacknowledged. That's why it's never acknowledged. They don't need any crimes. They don't need probable cause. All they need to do, and this is how they do it, they send a letter from the FBI to a federal magistrate judge, and they have your photo, and they say this person is subject to an FBI investigation. And once they do that, everything is tracked, cards, everything, your cell phone calls, nothing you have, because you're listed as a threat. You know, this was supposed to be meant for these sleeper cell terrorists that never, I mean, where are they? So what they did was after 9/11, they just took all the executive orders and legislation they passed in the federal government to protect you, and they, millions and millions of innocent Americans got targeted, men, women, every children are on this, you know, whole families are on this. So when I was, when it first started in New Hampshire, I was making sales, making calls in Massachusetts, and I had a friend of mine that I went to elementary school, junior high, high school. We played sports together every day. And he was a state trooper in the Connecticut, master sergeant. And I called him, and I said, well, you got to tell me what's going on here. And he said, I'm not a lawyer. I said, I don't need a lawyer. I need to find out what you guys are doing. He said, what's going on? I said, I got cruisers following me all around. I haven't done anything wrong. And he said, what else has happened? I said, vandalism, home entries, all this character assassination in my neighborhood. People treat me like I'm a scumbag. I haven't done anything wrong. And so he goes, all I can tell you is it's a federal program. I said, what? It's a federal program. We have to go along with it. Everything is federalized. State police, local police. This is run out of the fusion centers. They're all members of the fusion center. So you'd have the state police in a fusion center. You'd have local police in a fusion center. And they're all there. And once you're listed as a special access program unacknowledged, your name goes into Woodbridge, Virginia, which is an FBI location. Woodbridge, Virginia, you can pull up their thing on Facebook. You'll see my name there, Jeff Murray, pointing out their crimes to them, because this is COINTELPRO, similar to COINTELPRO, counterintelligence program, which they ran on civil rights folks in the 60s and 70s, like Black Panthers, Martin Luther King, war protesters. You know, the problem with the United States government is, you know, I'm in business and I want business from the very people who really kind of usurp the government. The corporations run the government. I mean, you know, I want business, but, you know, when I deal with a defense contractor, they just screw me over. I mean, they screw me over. I got hit with directed energy weapons, and I get hit every night. That's the honest-to-God truth. Since 2009, I've gotten hit with directed energy weapons every single night. But usually when I make calls, I don't have, you know, I don't get hit. But I got hit in the property of the largest defense contractor in the country, right on their property, making a call there in Orlando, Florida, Missiles Division. You know, and anytime I get in the door there, if they give me an order, everything goes wrong. Quality problem, quality problem. But there's no quality. There's no quality problems. So what this is they had to justify their budgets in the Department of Homeland Security and all the infrastructure. So when I sit on a plane, this has happened. This is, and just for your listeners, this is important in case anybody's targeted. Because if you don't know what it is, they're going to get you to react the way you read in the newspaper. You read about these people in the newspaper that charge the cockpit. And, oh, boy, everybody in first class was a big hero. And they tackled this guy who was trying to take over the cockpit. Well, that's baloney. And I've had it happen to me, and it always happens on the approach. And it's usually on a red-eye flight at night. So when you're coming in, if you're sitting there, and all of a sudden you feel what's like a sword going through your body. They hit me 7 or 8 times one time. You just say, stay seated and stay buckled. Because if you unbuckle, because this thing feels like a knife blade going through your heart, you're going to be in the news. And when it happened to me, I said, I know what this is. This is a laser, handheld laser weapon. It's a directed energy weapon. And I just sat there and took it and looked behind me. Of course, the guy's got his earbuds in. The air marshal will always have his earbuds in. And that's what it was. You know, they're on every flight. So when I boarded a flight in February before this lockdown baloney began, I was at a trade show going back to Charlotte. And when I was boarding, I said to the steward, two pilots, I said, where's the air marshal sitting tonight? Today? Is he behind me? Are we going to be playing this game with the handheld laser going through me? It was dead silence. Didn't say a word. But that's how they get somebody they targeted to run to the front of the plane. So that's one of the tactics. And I want to tell you, when you're targeted, every corner, it's like something different. They use what's called, people call them gang stalkers, but people in the FBI have said, don't call them gang stalkers. They're basically citizens on patrol, community watch people. Unfortunately, it's not just a watch program. That's the unfortunate problem. It's a torture program. When they're vandalizing you inside and outside of your house, when they're all running all this gaslighting baloney on you, when they're running all sorts of psychological operations on the ground, they do provoked beatings. I've had about half dozen. And the guys who signed up for that, I call them nipple twisters. What they're going to do is they're going to provoke a fight over nothing, over absolutely nothing. But they've been trained for it, and they're working with the police, okay? And so in New Hampshire, they were all people like hockey players. That seemed to be a big thing. And down in South Carolina, they're not hockey players, but they are doing the same thing. And one of them, usually a female, will be holding a smartphone recording it all. So if you swing back, even to defend yourself, that's all that's going to be on the film, on the camera phone, when the cops get there. So on one they ran here in South Carolina, you know, I basically, you know, I if I started a fight, I know I'm going to be arrested. So I didn't swing, but I was backing up with my fists up ready. And we backed up and we backed up. I'm trying to get out of it. Finally, the guy wouldn't attack me while I was facing him. So, and the woman was holding the smartphone, recording. And it was over nothing. Absolutely nothing. And they always make a big deal out of nothing. And that's what the nipple twisters who are going to provoke a fight. Because you're the one that's going to be arrested, not them. They're working with the cops. So finally, you know, I backed up enough and I said, this guy's not going to attack me. You know, I made the mistake of turning to walk away. And he attacked me from behind. And he hit me with a good shot. Yeah, he hit me with a good shot to the head. And then he kicked me when I was on the ground. Now, I'm stubborn, So I was bleeding from the eye. And I still went on my 3 mile walk, bleeding. And I, you know, because I wanted my exercise, but I was, my head was a little whacked. So when I'm getting back to my car, which is at a public park, you know, and I see two cops, local police, city police, at my car. I go, that's perfect. That's just absolutely perfect. That's evidence right there. And how do they know which car is mine? SUV. So I go walking up to them. They go, we heard you were in a fight. I go, I wasn't in a fight. I was attacked.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you know which car was mine out of all these cars? And they didn't say anything. And, oh, do you want to press charges? You know who they are. I mean, why don't you call them up on the phone right now? You know, you're working with these people. I've been through a half dozen of these. I went through one, a couple of them in New Hampshire. Sometimes I got a couple good shots in myself. And, you know, I surprised one guy, but, you know, I'm 60 going on 62. So, you know, this is what you're dealing with. And that's some of the time. And then other times it's, you know, basically vandalism to your property. That's some of the time. And then some of the time it's, you know, your neighbors are all part of it. They're told that you're some type of threat to be watched. Unfortunately, you know, I had to pay $4,000 when they vandalized the air conditioner compressor outside. The police didn't come down, even though I reported it. Then I had the inside with the flooding of the kitchen with the vandalism to the tap. And then I've had, if you looked at this house here, bricks, it's all the bricks are chipped up, chipped out. It'll be one thing after another. I had four cars repainted. I don't repaint the cars anymore because it's too expensive. They want you to spend your money to get things fixed when they vandalize it. So, you know, they're going to scratch the hell out of it. You're going to come back from a walk and there's going to be another big gouge or whatever. So I just leave them now. But, you know, this is state-sponsored organized stalking is what some people call it. A guy named Chris Bronson who's on this program. There's a lot of people that are on Facebook. There are millions of people. The numbers are going up, you know, going up and up. And, you know, there's not really much you can do about it because it's state-sanctioned. You know, you can go to court, you can try to get a lawyer, you know, but it really is not going to help because they know it's them. And when they list you in the FBI, you know, target individuals on this program who were in the FBI, like Gerald Soulsby, who's a Vietnam vet. He's on this program. He's an attorney. All the same things and worse has happened to him and his wife. He basically said when you're listed in the FBI, they list you as a, quote, unquote, non-investigative subject. So they don't want to spend a lot of time investigating Jeff Murray because, you know, they know I'm just one of the millions and millions of people that are innocent Americans, you know, that get targeted. To justify their increasing budgets, you know, the air marshal, you know, if you're air marshals and you're using that laser on somebody, you need to, if there's no threats, you need to create some threats, you know, so the budgets will go be reduced if they don't have the threats that the whole system was based on. So, you know, it's a very evil program. I believe in, I'm very convinced that our government has been usurped by Wall Street and Liberty Street. Liberty Street in Manhattan is where the Federal Reserve is, which is a private corporation. And they direct things through the CIA. And so you're dealing with, you know, a Zionist hijacked government. And your representatives, whether they're federal, state, or local, they go along with all of it because they're afraid of them, and they get money from them. You know, the state governments and the local governments are dependent on these federal dollars, and your dollar isn't worth anything anymore. You know, in your lifetime, in my lifetime, at one time, we could walk into the bank and hand them a dollar, and they'd give us a silver dollar because it was backed by gold and then silver. And now it's not backed by anything. So, unfortunately, on Facebook, I see so many targeted individuals coming onto this program being targeted. Now, when I first went on it, it was usually people in their 50s, 40s, 50s, and 60s. For some reason, it was all older people. But now I see people in their 20s and 30s. I feel extra bad for them myself because I say to myself, well, I got targeted, but at least I had my 20s and my 30s, you know, where when I was going into the grocery store, there wasn't people, or they call them gang stalkers. I call them basically citizens on patrol. They signed up for something like Community Watch. They might have signed up for InfraGuard, which is a part of the FBI, but it's a civilian part, or Citizens Corps, or there's another group called CERTS. But it's this huge nationwide paranoia post 9/11 that everybody's a threat. You know, you go up to a corporate company now to make a call, and it's like you're some kind of threat. You're just getting out of your car. I've had people sit on my car, and I hadn't even got out of my car yet. And I'm like, yeah, well, yeah. I got escorted off the property.
Did they have guns on you
just,
when they surrounded you
no,
on the car? Did they,
no.
Mm-hmm.
They're not holding guns on me, but, like, I made a call, especially on a defense contractor, or I made a call on a company you might know called Boston Dynamics. They're the ones that make the robots for, you know, Big Dog.
Mm-hmm.
These robots, I think, are going to end up being used on us. But they got bought out by Google, and I made a call out of them in Massachusetts, and I had a dude on each side of my car, and I hadn't even got out of the door yet. You know, and it was all this hyper security stuff. And,
wow.
You know, in the old days, you used to be able to walk in. I used to be able to, in the 80s, and I could drive right up to Raytheon and not even have a call there, just to sit in their lobby to use their public the telephone with my credit card to make calls. And now when you pull up, not only, you know, it's all hyper security. There's a guard, and the guard stops you, and whoever you're going to see there had better send the paperwork down there. Otherwise, you won't get through. You know, it's this targeting will follow you right into your family, your immediate family. Some of your family members will believe you, and some of your family members won't believe you. My mother, my own mother, you know, I love my mother. She died in 2017. But when I first went on this program, I said, I got hit so hard with directed energy, I couldn't even stay in my house in New Hampshire. And I had to go out there for Christmas, just, you know, because it's an annual thing. You go out there for Christmas, and the whole family's there, sisters and everybody. And, you know, my mother said, well, I don't really believe you, but I'm behind you, blah, blah, blah. And I said, that's fine. I don't. If somebody told me this was happening to him, I wouldn't believe him either. And
that's right.
The terrible part for her was, I've seen two people now that were very close to me, my mother and a woman named Patty who lived in my neighborhood, and both of them said the same thing. You know, I don't believe you. And then what happened? They put it on them. And my mother got hit with electric energy, and she would be crying every morning. And tears because of the pain, extreme pain.
Mm.
All she said was, why did you bring this to my house?
Wow.
She was being
blaming
called
you
around.
For it, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
she was
sad.
Blaming you. Yeah, but listen, you got about 90 seconds left.
Yep, she thought I brought it to her house, but I had no control of it starting or it continuing. So,
yeah,
it's real.
I'm
a white person, but there's a ton of black people on it. There's a ton of white people on it. There's every ethnic background I mean, it's amazing. And
Right.
and it's just amazing that they can keep this concealed.
Absolutely. And listen to this, Jeff. I really, really, really believe you because I know we have talked before. But look, I'm going to have to bring you back on so you can tell people because one thing I know about you, when you have something, you have facts to back it up. And that's, to me, one of
yeah.
the most important things that you can have. But look, I got to go now. But listen,
okay.
I'm going to make a deal. I want you to come back. Let's say the first of next month, I want you to come back and let's give them what they want because people need to know about this. I remember when people
yes,
first
sir.
Came on my show, they didn't believe
yes.
that this stuff was happening. They didn't believe that the government will put the microwave or some kind of electronic on you or try to burn you. People didn't believe it, but now people are singing a different tune. They believe that
yes,
this
sir.
Is happening, and it is happening. But Jeff,
yes,
thank
sir.
You so much for coming on, and I promise you that let's get together the first of next month, the first Sunday. I expect you to be back.
I sure will. Thank you for having
All
me
right,
on.
Thank you so much, Jeff. All right. That was my good friend Jeff. I tell you, he has been going through some stuff with this electronic, his microwave, all this stuff. And I tell you, nobody will understand it unless it's actually happening to you. Well, anyway, I got to bring in my good friend from Slidell, Louisiana, the one and only. There's not even two of her. But I got to bring her in because it's crucial that my girl, Belinda Parker Brown, Belinda Parker Brown, talk to me.
I'm listening to your show. Hello?
Yeah, I'm here. I
Hello?
Can hear you. I can hear you, girl. I'm here. I'm here, Belinda. Can you hear me?
Your show is phenomenal, Pastor Pinckney. You know, I'm just listening to the young man, you know, talk about how corrupt things are. But it's just time for us to, I know me and you just got off a very powerful, dynamic conference this weekend
absolutely.
With the Black is Back Coalition. I can't help but mentioning that because that is what the world needs to know. That is what everybody needs to know, is that it's just time for us to join up with a powerful organization, become a part of something that is going to bring the real change that the people need to see. And I'm hoping that you have Ms. Pamela on today, Pastor Pinckney. You know you invited her to come back. I've
that
been so busy
correct.
In the conference.
Can you can you kind of like give me the last digits of her number?
Her phone number? Okay, hold on. I don't have that with me right now, but let me see. I can look in my phone. Just hold on one moment
okay.
while you
okay.
address. Try to recap
I
everybody
not,
on what
I
happened to her
see,
son.
Right. I do not see her number, period.
Okay. All right. It's a 504 number, and the
that
last four digits should be, hold on, it should be like 4060, I think it is.
Absolutely.
But anyhow,
well,
I want to highlight. I want to give up just a brief, highlight on what she talked about on last week, which is so critically important right now, that her son was found dead, and the last time that he was seen was with the police in Jefferson Parish. That's right outside of New Orleans, about 15 minutes. He was found like in the high grass, near the water plant. And he appeared to have been beat to death, according to the autopsy, says that he died from blunt force trauma.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
my concern is that they have covered this up and that this lady has still not had the opportunity to mourn her son's death, celebrate his death, or even get his body from the coroner. So I know as of last week when she spoke to you, she had still not received or retrieved his body. And this has been going on for over 11 months now, pretty close to a year, that she's been waiting for them to hand his body over and give her. She had just received the autopsy with the death determination, and basically tell her what happened to her son. And she's been given all types of runaround. There has been no, you know, media whatsoever coverage in regards to them finding him dead right outside the water plant in New Orleans. There have not been any type of response from the public or the law enforcement, any of her questions. They have avoided all of that, Pastor Pinckney. And what I'm saying is that it's just time for the people to give a, take a stand on how corrupt the police, I want to say, association, because I believe that our police, our law enforcement have been infiltrated by some evil, wicked people that have their intentions to do whatever they want to do. So on that note, I'm just calling on Banco and all of our organizations that are out there to help get justice for BJ. And they can go to the website. It's Justice for BJ. It's on Facebook. All they have to do is just Google his name, Justice for BJ, and they can go and follow him and read about, you know, his story and what happened to this young man. He was only like 20, I think it's like in his early 20s, 22 or 23 years
right.
old, Pastor Pinckney. It is so sad.
Wow.
So I was hoping that she had a chance to come in and just weigh in on, you know, any progress or what, you know, what have transpired since the last time she talked to you last week. But on that note, I got to let you know that I have a very important announcement to make. And that announcement is none other than here in the state of Louisiana, the COVID-19 is spreading like a wildfire inside of the prisons and jails. I just got a call on yesterday about Angola that they're basically have down quite a few of the, you know, the domes there. They call them, you know, Dome F, D, and all of that. And because of the COVID-19 inside of that prison, so over 300 and some people have been infected with the virus. I'm almost pretty sure that some people have died, but we cannot believe in their data or information that they've given us, because we know that they're lying to us about it. So what we're saying is that here in the state of Louisiana, Pastor Pinckney, our governor has the executive powers to order a controlled evacuation. And no one is doing anything about the fact that these people are suffering and dying inside of these jails, hellhole jails and prisons across this state. And LUI, our organization, is Louisiana United. You know for a fact that you have came down here, Pastor Pinckney. You have united with us. You know that we have thousands of people that have been wrongfully incarcerated. You also know that Pastor Victor is a victim of this 10-2 verdict where they you know, it was a non-unanimous jury that put him in prison and gave him life for a crime he did not commit. So with you knowing that, Pastor Pinckney, I want you to know that genocide, you know, this is almost have been determined that it's better that these people die, because it's so many innocent people. And all you got to do is read the writing on the wall. If all of these people have been ruled by the United States, the highest court in the land, the United States Supreme Court ruled that these people have been wrongfully convicted, and we're talking about thousands of people. Our organization have vetted only like 2,000 or so, but it could be anywhere between 30 to 40,000 people that have been wrongfully convicted up under this racist, unconstitutional Jim Crow law. So what they're saying is better that these people die. So what they're doing is that they're bringing sick people off the street with the COVID-19, putting them inside of the prison with these people, okay, so that they can get sick and die past the pygmy, because they know if these people deserve justice because of that racist, unconstitutional statute that they had wrongfully convicted people under, they do not want these people to get free, because they would have somebody would have to be responsible for what they did to these people. So it's almost like it's like a death trap, and it's a fiery furnace, and they're saying it's better that they all die. And we need a public outcry, Pastor Pinckney. We need a public outcry, because I know for a fact that they do not intend to free these people and give them justice for what they did to them that was wrong. So thank you so much for allowing me to share.
All right. Listen, Belinda Parker Brown, let's get on that, and let's talk. You know, let's do that, and so we can figure out a way how what we're going to do next. I think that's more important than anything else. Right on. All right.
You know,
well,
I talked
so
to Chairman O'Malley. I want to say this. I talked to the Chairman O'Malley, and I really want us to have a campaign to free all of the political prisoners, especially these people that have been wrongfully convicted. So thank you so much, Pastor Pinckney. It's time for us to get up and get them moving to save these people's lives.
Absolutely. I agree 100%. All right. My girl, Belinda Parker Brown. Talk to you soon. All right. It's going down. That's all I can say. Now I got to bring in my good friend, Miss Johnson, because I think she has a story to tell, and she need our help. So those of you who are out there, listen to what she has to say, and if you could figure out a way to help her, and that go for my good friend Jeff, that go for everybody, then let's figure out a way how we're going to be able to help each other. Miss Johnson, Reverend Pinckney, how are you doing today?
Good. How are you, Reverend Pinckney?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
Good, good. Blessed. I'm blessed.
Absolutely, absolutely.
In spite of.
That's right. You said the magic word, in spite of. Talk to me. Tell me, because I got some new listeners on who want to hear your story directly, and I promised them that you would be on so they can get an idea exactly what's going on, how did this happen, and how they can help you. They're from California, so they said that they would listen today, and I see that they're on, so they want to hear the story, and they want you to tell it so they can get a picture of what they need to do to help you.
Okay. my son, Gregory Johnson Jr., was murdered November 22nd, 2008, in the Sigma Chi Fraternity House at San Jose State University. I was notified at 9:30 that night, even though they had found his body at 2:45. they told a Clear Lake police officer, four of them came into my house, and it wasn't in their jurisdiction. This happened 3 hours away, and nobody from down there ever called me or contacted me. The Clear Lake Police Department came here and to my home and told me my son had hung himself. Officer Stuhler gave me a card to call the coroner's office, and I called the coroner's office and asked, could we come down and identify his body, because I really didn't believe it was him. I thought they had made some horrible mistake and it was some other child. And when I called the coroner's office, Claudine answered, and she told me that his body had already been identified, that we could not come down to identify him. His body had already been identified by his frat brothers, fraternity brothers. So I called my son, who lived closer, and I thought maybe if he was closer, they would let him come in, because it wasn't that far to come. Because after all, they didn't notify me until 9:30 that night.
Right. And remember, the frat brothers, they're not family.
No, they're not family. I thought it had to be your next of kin.
Right, absolutely.
You know. And by this time, I really felt I was getting sick. I was sick. I fell out on the floor, and I'm just moving. I was just going through the motions to try to see my child. And they told me that if he came down, and he was only a half an hour from the coroner's office. He lived a half an hour at the time. And if he came down, they would not let him in, and there would be detectives outside because they were getting very upset also. And but I know nobody threatened anything. You know, they just shut down. We could not identify him point blank, period. It took me 13 days to get his body here. They recommended that I have him cremated at the coroner's office, which I was not going to do because I knew my son didn't kill himself.
Yeah.
And it took 13 days. By the time we got him up here to the Clear Lake funeral home, Jones Funeral Home, I took a camera with me because I tried to get an attorney to go with me, and he backed down. And he said he was going to bring somebody with a camera to take pictures. And I took a camera with me, and while we were there, we took pictures of every inch of his body. My son had a 6-inch crack on the back of his head. They claimed he hung himself. My son had no ligature marks on his neck. His neck was broken, though, all the way through his spine, because his hair was resting on a square block. I have pictures of that. I have pictures of the crack. It was not a scar. It's, a lot of the newspapers get it wrong and say it was a scar. Well, no, it was a crack in the back of his head. And when I moved the block, rigor mortis sets in before 13 days. When I moved the block, his head fell backwards in my hand, and I laid his head on the table.
Wow.
The case, first of all, about 4 days later, I was contacted by the Dana Overstreet, who is the supervisor of the homicide division of the Santa Clara County Police Department. Okay, the DA's office. DA's office, that's it. She's a district attorney. She was supervisor in the district attorney. I talked with her, and she told me that no stone would be left unturned, that she had a child, she was a mother too, that this was a very suspicious case, and there would be, the press would come in, and she would call me to come down there for a press conference. I didn't hear from her. It was a week later. I waited 1 week. I called back, and I talked to District Attorney Thompson at the District Attorney's office. Under Rosen, who's still there, and that district attorney told me that she was sick and she wouldn't be back for a month. And then when a month went by, it was 3 months. Okay, I'm cutting short because this is a long story. What they have taken me through as a parent. I called the coroner's office on several different occasions asking for pictures. If my son committed suicide, they should have been more than willing to give me complete reports and pictures.
Absolutely.
Which they were not. They were not. They did not, and they have not. It'll be 12 years in November 22nd. I do not have the complete police reports. I have no pictures. If I hadn't seen it for myself and took the pictures myself, I would have never known. I would have only known the lies that they told me, that the Lake County NAACP called the FBI and told them that was a hate crime. Everybody knew Gregory had everything going for himself. He was smarter than anybody in that fraternity house. Okay? He went there with honors. They had done research on us to find out that we were poor, knew we couldn't afford different things, so they can make up a lie about what happened to Gregory. Now, all of a sudden, they're pro they're anti-suicide, and they got all kinds of stuff down there that they're promoting anti-suicide while they were involved in a murder. We are dealing with Satan himself. I can't tell you the distress that I have been under in dealing with these people who lie. And I'm talking about people from the top. I'm talking about Kamala Harris's office. Okay? They came to court with no discovery because they knew they were going to throw the case out. It was already planned. They had no discovery. The Sigma Chi attorney had no discovery. Okay? And the Judge Cousins told us in 3 days. Okay, now I'm skipping way ahead. By the time I did get the case to court, in 3 days they were supposed to, Kamala Harris's office was supposed to bring back the discovery. They came to court with no paperwork. Have you ever heard of such a thing? No paperwork.
Absolutely not.
Because they already knew. Pardon me? Yes, Reverend.
Wow, mate. I would say, wow, that's amazing when you sit down and think about it. How can they come to court with exactly no paperwork at all?
No paperwork, at not one piece of paper pertaining to my son's case. They came with empty briefcases. Two female attorneys. One represented the state's attorney and one represented Sigma Chi. The judge gave them 3 days to come back with the discovery. The 3 days came and went. And on the 28th day, my attorney called me and told me they had thrown the case out because of the statute of limitations. There is no statute of limitations on murder in any state in the union.
There you go. There you go.
They decided that whoever, whether it was these rich kids in this fraternity, that were involved, and it was 33. The house was full of kids when my son's body was found. The last time he was seen was at 12 o'clock at 2:45. They claimed he was hanging downstairs in the basement. Nobody else saw anything. It was full of, they had had a party the night before. It was full of female sorority members, and it was full of Sigma Chi members. 33 members they had, 32 with my son. Okay, my son was the only black male living in the house at the time. Yes, it was a hate crime, and the FBI, that's why the FBI has a 300-page report they will not give me with pictures, with CDs. They don't do a 300-page report on suicide.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
There was no suicide. It was murder. It was homicide. That's why I was in Dana Overstreet's office. Now, I have people telling me, well, be careful, Denise, this can happen, that can. Well, guess what? When you start killing people's kids, that's our legacy right there. What else can they do?
There you go.
What more can they do? They killed her perfectly, and now they have the nerve to say that the child, because they were so hateful, so racist. That fraternity has a history of racism that I knew nothing about. I'm sorry, I didn't go to college. I didn't know about fraternities or none of that stuff. All I knew, I was trying to get my son to get an education so he could have a profession. He was going to be a doctor, and he was well on his way. He was making A's and B's. And he was counseling other kids, other students, because he was a licensed ordained minister. I'm telling you, yes, he was mine, but I never know him to do any wrong to anybody. And certainly not himself. And if that was the case, why can't I have the evidence? Because they have no evidence of suicide. He was murdered. I've got a box that sat next to his bed covered with blood splatter. They had packed when I got there the next day to the fraternity house. They had taken all his stuff and folded it up and put it in boxes. And they had, you could smell the pine saw throughout the house, which I had never smelled before, where they were cleaning up blood. I have items with blood stains, my child's blood stains on them.
And where did they say the blood?
Yes, it's genocide. They're killing our future. That's what they're doing.
Right. But where did they say the blood came from?
They never said anything. I found the blood when I got his things back.
Mm-hmm.
When I picked up his things and brought them back home and started going through them. And it took me like a month or two to even get to the point where I could do that, to go through everything.
Wow.
They had confiscated one of his phones. They did not. The frat members had confiscated one of his phones and erased all the pictures out of it. They have somebody who had access to his Facebook account, and they went in, and he had hundreds of pictures on there. He was very popular, very nice-looking, good kid, you know. All the girls loved him, you know. And these people, they're crazy. And then they try to make you look crazy. And they're the ones that have the issue. You know, and my son is not the only person that has been murdered down there at a university. And they all were black except for one. Okay, one guy. And he was Latino, and the campus police shot him in the back. That's a campus of murder. That's a cursed place. I wouldn't send nothing down there.
Wow. And they got to have Smith and Carlos, a statue there right in the front.
Right in the front.
Did you see? Yeah,
right in the front.
Like there's no racism at that university. Right there in the front of the building, so everybody could see. It's about 20 feet tall.
Yeah, they'll let you in. They'll let you in, Reverend Petrie, but if you're black, you may not come out.
I know that.
Or Latino, brown.
Yes. Listen, you got a couple of minutes. Tell us what you want people to know. And if they want to get in touch with you, how would they get in touch with you?
You can get in touch with me through, we have a website, Justice for Gregory Johnson Jr. .com. Okay. I'm also on Instagram and Twitter. We post justice for Gregory.com. We are trying to raise funds to get an attorney that's not afraid to deal with the system. And I know it's hard to do, you know, because all of them are wrapped up in the system, it seems like. But we're trying. All we can do is try.
That's right.
We're trying to raise funds through GoFundMe. We have a change.org petition. But the funds from that do not go to us. They go back to change.org, which is where most of the money has gone. We didn't know that. So this is how you get in contact with me. And, you know, Reverend, you have my email. Anybody can email me anytime. I may not hear the phone because I'm up in the mountains. I may not hear the phone all the time, you know. But that's where we're at now.
All right. Well, what I'm going to do, I'm going to spread this around so people can contact you. And I did the last time you was on. There was a lot of talk. I got a lot of stuff in the chat room that I'm going to share with you off the phone. And let's talk before the week is out. Let's do that.
Okay.
All right. Listen.
Thank you.
We're going to be praying for you. And we're praying that, you know, that we get to the truth and deal with these people, because I think that is crucial. Let's do that.
Google Justice for Gregory Johnson Jr. There's so many articles, so many.
All right.
But, and I know it's been a long time, but you don't forget. A parent never forgets.
Yeah.
apparent, especially when you know that the story has not been told. The truth is never told. You never have closure. Thank you.
Absolutely. All right, now. All right, Ms. Johnson. Let me bring in my good friend Lee from Detroit, the one and only. There's not two Lees, there's only one. Lee, talk to me. Tell me what you want to know. Tell me the good news that you got.
Well, the beautiful news is they, out of all this time where they didn't want to believe it and all of that, well, he ended up getting caught again. They ignored everything, and now he's caught up again for murder. This time he's in a county jail. They federal informant is being charged with first-degree murder, premeditated, homicide, murder, felony murder, like three counts of felony firearm, and all type of stuff.
How many counts of murder have you been charged with?
So far I've seen on there first-degree premeditated, and I've seen homicide, felony murder.
Okay. Well, this the guy that's been going around killing everybody anyway, right up there in Detroit.
Yeah, the one I told you made Kenyell Brown look like a schoolgirl.
Right. Well, what about the guy?
Yeah, the one that's on my case.
He's the one on your case?
Yeah.
Okay. So he was he going to be a witness against you?
Oh yeah. He got to come back to court. So I want to see how this is going to work out. Now that he's in there fighting murder, and they already knew he was a serial killer.
Right. Wow. What about that guy that they killed in the backyard? In I think it was in Oak Park, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was Kenyell Brown. That was his buddy.
Okay. Now they was buddies. Those two was the one doing all the killing.
Yep. Well, there's more of them, but these are just the two of the ones that they've been brought for. But it's a lot of these informants in Detroit that they got cold case murders on them, and so they don't go astray and do what they want them to do. That's when they'll bring the cold case murder up on them.
I know they got a history of all the unsolved murders. If you're a drug dealer, they try to give you a murder case and one of these bodies, then they have one of these guys come in and testify that they use at the scene of the crime. And that's how they normally operate.
Exactly.
But that's their history. The point is, the common person don't know this. If you say, well, there's an eyewitness to Joseph Taylor being killed, and who is he? He's the guy who killed him. That's how he's an eyewitness to the killer. You know, and this been going on in Detroit for so long. There's a lot of murder that has not been solved, and these guys walk around here killing people like it's nothing, and also getting a free pass. But what about the guy that was at school that had just dropped off his daughter or something, and the guy walked up to him to the truck and killed him? Jumped in his back seat, shot and killed him.
Yep.
Wow. Wow, but that was the other guy, right? The one that got killed. He was the one shot this person, right?
Yeah, he the one that's locked up right now, and the one that's on my case is the one that put it all together.
So what they said about you? They saying that you was a drug dealer, and they purchased drugs from you. Is that what they saying?
Yeah. Said that they don't bought some drugs for me.
Two real murders. People, they probably between them, they killed about 20 people. Wow. But this time, I wonder why they brought him in this time. You think he's gone wild or something? Or what do you think?
Well, his co-defendant told on him and said he was a mass murderer. They don't get caught
on
camera.
That's the one that killed was his co-defendant, right?
Well, one of them got killed. One of them lived.
Oh, okay. Wow, this is turning to be something made for TV or the movies or something where it turned out. But it's an everyday occurrence. This is what they've been doing for a long time. And it's not just in Detroit. It's all over this country.
Oh, it's all over the country.
Yeah, it's all over the country. What they doing right now, and then they have behind the law. These criminals, real criminals. These are when you're a murderer, you're a real criminal. You out here killing people
exactly.
And getting away with it and with the help of law enforcement. And they got the nerve talking about there's some good cops and bad cops. I like to see some good cops because I haven't met too many of them.
Wow. Well,
this is
that's
really
Detroit for you.
Change. Yeah, well, it's not just Detroit. It's all over the country. It's the same situation. One thing, they're copycats, these different places. What they do in one city, they do in the next, you see. And that's how they operate. They always talk about the killings that exist in Chicago and stuff like that. See, but most people don't even know that some of these people are hired killers. These are mercenaries paid for by the government. The government is the one behind these killings. And like you are a perfect example. You gave the evidence. You said that these two guys were killers. The government is behind these guys, supporting them, supplying them with a living for killing people. And, you know, it's a strong possibility that guy may not serve not one day in jail. Other than his bond, until he. So you got a lot to chew on, big fella. Yeah. You got a lot to chew on. You got some stuff to do that's, you know, did you report this to your attorney? What happened?
He
already knew.
He was like, because he was like, how is this going on? And they been knew this.
Yeah, but he shocked. He part of that system. He know what's going on. All these lawyers be knowing what's going on. That's why they don't buck the system. Man, this is amazing. I hope my listeners are listening to this stuff. This stuff is real. We've been talking about this stuff. This stuff is real. This is no joke. This is the real deal, what's going on today. But we don't do nothing unless it affects our family. It's time that we get off these high horses and get out here and start challenging these people. Because it could be me today and you tomorrow. Because these folks is coming. They got hired mercenary killers, contractors, everything out here killing folks. And they're going to continue killing people until we stop them. Wow, Lee, I tell you. Have they gave you a trial date yet? Well, I think we'd have lost Lee. But listen to this, everybody. This is amazing. This is what I've been telling people all along. This government would do anything. And the thing is, they got the resources to do it. When you have the resources to do it, you can do these things. And that's really what it's all about. They would do anything. I had my friend Dorothy, she was in the service. She was telling us about what they was doing to people, how they were sexually attacking females. And people said, no, that wasn't happening. They wouldn't do stuff like that. This government would do anything. And don't think for one moment that they will not. They will do anything. And we better get our heads together and deal with this mess. Because they folks is coming, man. You know, it looked like it could be me today, but also you tomorrow. But look, I only got about 30 seconds left. I just want people to know that I really appreciate my guest today. I really appreciate everybody calling in. And Ms. Johnson, let's figure out a way how we can help Ms. Johnson. Let's find someone. My good friend Belinda Parker Brown, she know an attorney that will help. So let's get in touch with her and let's take this thing to a whole different level because we got some folks that's going to help her and we're going to get closure for the family. On that note, I have just ran out of time. Next week, same time, same station. Wow.